सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Let's chant. Om Vasudevendra Yogindram Natva Jnana Pradam Gurum Mumukshunam Hitarthaya Tattva Bodho Bhidhiyate. Repeat after me. Tattva Vivekaha Kaha Tattva Vivekaha Kaha Atma Satyam Atma Satyam Tadanyat Sarvam Tadanyat Sarvam Mithyeti Mithyeti. Good. When I walk down a path and I don't know the truth of the rope, I can see a snake. When I walk down the path and I don't know the truth of the tree stump, there's a possibility that I will see a scary man with a hatchet ready to do me harm. It's the ignorance of the truth of the rope and the ignorance of the truth of the tree stump that allows me to see a snake and to see a robber. There's a superimposition of the snake and the robber on the rope and the tree stump. So too, in the absence of knowledge of the true nature of myself, in that absence, the world is very eager to fill in the blanks. It tries to sell me. The world tries to sell me on the nature of myself. The world fills in the blank. I am. And then there's the question, I am, and where does it I am land? I am the body. I am the thoughts. I am happy. I am smart. I am inadequate. And it even goes out into the jagat proper. It goes out and I say, this is mine. This is mine. This is my son. This is my house. This is my car. This is my job. This is my wife. It's all mine. That's an extension. That mamatvam, that sense of mine-ness, is an extension of the ahankara, of the I-ness. We lay claim on objects in the world. And we lay claim to this body-mind-sense complex. When we say, I am the body. I am the body, or I am the attributes of the body. I am the mind and the attributes of the mind. I am these emotions. So does this I land on the karya karana sanghata? We introduced that term, karya karana sanghata. Karya means the body. Karana means the senses, the instruments, the antakarana, the inner sense, and the karmendriyani and jnanendriyani, specifically the senses of action and perception. I am that collection, the sankhata, the complex, the aggregate of this karya karana, of this senses and this body. And it's this world keeps filling in who I am, what I am. I am American. I am a doctor or a lawyer. I am a brother. I am a father. It fills in my identity through my associations with my objects. I have many objects, so I am rich. I have a lot of money, so I am rich. I have no money, so I am poor. Where does this I land? It's a very interesting exercise just to watch, just to listen. It's very subtle because the I just keeps being placed in so many different places. And yet when we look at it more closely, we see that I am, right? And we see I perceive. I am not what I perceive, and so I perceive the body, I perceive the thoughts, I perceive the emotions, I perceive all of these. And it's like a passing show in a sense. And I illumine all of these. I am aham asmi, I am present, aham bhami, I shine. And I illumine all this phenomenon. As we mentioned, this body, it's just an object, can be resolved through our knowledge into the world of objects. And these thoughts can be resolved into this world of thoughts. So when we say Atma Satyam, what is Tattva Vekaha? Kaha, what is Tattva Vekaha? Atma Satyam, that Atma is Satyam, and Tat Anyat Sarvam, everything else other than that is Mithya. So this Aham, this Atma, is a conscious, a simple conscious being. We say it is Satyam. And we looked a lot at that last week. And then Tat Anyat Sarvam is Mithya. So what is Satyam and what is Mithya? We spent some time looking at. So I have a flower here. Satyam means true. Satyam means real, right? This is real. I have a flower. Is this flower real? Well, it looks real. Even though my eyes are getting older, I have to look through my bifocals. It smells real. It feels real. If I taste it, oh no, it's plastic. It's a plastic flower. Is it real? Well, I thought it was real when it smelled real, when it looked real, when it felt real. But it sounds like a silk flower. This is a silk flower. It's not real. We have words that describe our notions of the nature of things. And one of them is real. We use the word real. But when we say this flower is real, really what we're saying is that it's genuine. It's naturally produced. It is not artificial. We have a real and artificial. We have real and false. And this is as though a flower, because it didn't stem from the earth. And so we say it's not real. Okay. But when we say Atma is Satyam, we're not saying that this self is authentic, this self is genuine, this self is like it's really good, it's naturally occurring, it's true to form. What we say is that this Atma is existent. So this Atma is existent, and that's what we mean by real. And so that's not anything mind-blowing. That's not anything new. I know that I exist. We see that everything exists. We see that the table exists and that the man exists. And we see that the sun exists. And we see the sun, the other type of sun, exists. And we see the Vandhya exists. We see the woman who's never had a child exists. And we see the Putra, he exists. But we don't see a Vandhya Putra. We don't see the son of somebody who's never had any children. We see the rabbit, the shesha. We see the vishana. We see the horn. But we never see the shesha vishana. We never see the horns of a hare, horns of a rabbit. So that is not real at all. Remember we talked about Mr. Tucham last week? We met Mr. Tucham who made square circles out of the horns of a rabbit, who lived in the clouds. That is tucham, adyanta abhava, completely non-existent. So we have something that exists and something that will never exist. A square circle will never exist. And so we have these adjectives, such as real and unreal, which we apply to the objects in our experience, or in this case, the objects that are not in our experience and will never be in our experience. language is very interesting. Language informs our experience. And our experience, of course, informs our language. We label things that we know, and we tend to know things that we have labels for. We have nouns. We have things in our experience. We have people. We have things. And we put names on them. Those are nouns. And we see these things doing things, performing actions. The horse runs. The flower grows. The man speaks. And since they do things, we have verbs. And we see that these things do things differently. This horse runs quickly. This horse runs slowly. This plant grows quickly. This plant grows slowly. This man speaks clearly. This man speaks unclearly. So we have adverbs. Which man? Which horse? Which flower? The black horse runs quickly. The white horse runs slowly. We have adjectives, black and white, because we want to differentiate between the black horse and the white horse. The black and the white are adjectives to horse. Black and white are adjectives to horse. The tall man speaks quickly. The short man speaks slowly. Tall and short are adjectives to man. Tall and short are not intrinsic to a man. They're attributes of a man. Fast and slow are attributes of horse. They're not intrinsic to hoarseness itself. If fastness or slowness was intrinsic to hoarseness, then all horses would be fast, slow. So attributes, as presented through adjectives, are not intrinsic to the object. Whereas we don't have to say wet water, because there is no thing as dry water. Water is wet, but we'll never say, oh, please bring me a glass of wet water. We could say, please bring me a glass of cold water or hot water, because those are changing incidental attributes of water. But water itself is wet. We never have to say, please bring me a glass of wet water, because wetness is the very property, the innate, inherent property of water. It's not an incidental attribute. It's not an adjective. We don't need to say a wet versus dry water, because there's no two types of water. We do have to say a black horse and a white horse, because we need to use an adjective to differentiate between two incidences, if you will, to differentiate between two objects of the same group, of the same species. One is white, one is black. So we apply adjectives to describe objects, to differentiate them from other objects of the same class. Now, let's look at satyam a little closer and mithya. I have a shirt on. It's just a white shirt. Now, I could have a black shirt on or a red shirt on. The black, red, and whiteness of the shirt are not inherent to shirtness, are not inherent to being a shirt. Those are incidental properties. Now, you say I have a shirt on. I say this is fabric. Who's right? You say shirt, I say fabric. Who's right? If I say this is white and you say this is shirt, we can both be right, right? Because you're describing an adjective that describes the color of the shirt, and I'm talking about the shirt itself. And we can both be right. They're not synonyms, but we're both right. If we're talking about an object and we use two separate words and they're synonyms, then we can both be right. If you say, bring me a glass of water, and I say, bring me a glass of jalam, or bring me a glass of agua, we can both be right. That's water. This is agua. No, this is water. No, this is agua. No, this is water. This is agua. No, they're synonyms. They're talking about the same object. You can both be right if they're synonyms. But if we're using two separate words that are not synonyms, we cannot both be right. I can't say that this is fabric and this is a shirt. We cannot both be equally right. One of us has to be a little less right. It's not false that this is a shirt. It's not false that this is fabric. But which is more right? So, of course, I take out my trusty scissors. And just to prove the point, I take out the scissors and I cut the stitching. I cut the stitching around the sleeves and around the neck and around the collar. And now I present it to my friend and say, okay, who's right? And my friend says, what are you doing? You just ruined a perfectly good shirt. I say, no, where's the shirt? I don't see a shirt. All I see is cloth. All I see is fabric. The fabric was here before the presence of the shirt. The fabric is here in the presence of the shirt. And the fabric is here after the presence of the shirt. So in this fabric world, in this world of textiles, in this world of clothing, I should say, what's satyam? What's real? What's true? What's true is cloth. Cloth is there when the shirt is there. Cloth is there when the shirt is not there. What is fundamental and what is incidental? The fabric is satyam. What's incidental is the shirtness. I could have a handkerchief. What is incidental and what is fundamental? What's fundamental, what's there, is cloth in the form of a handkerchief. Now, is this form tucham? Is this shirt completely unreal, like Mr. Tucham? Is his shirt completely unreal, like the son of a Vandya or like a square circle? Is this shirt unreal? Is it an illusion? Are we living in a world of illusion shirts? Well, the illusion, if you will, serves a purpose. It keeps me warm. We can't say it's an illusion. It has what's called vyavahara yogyam. It has a transactional functionality, a vyavahara yogyam, a transactional. Vyavahara means transaction, business, everyday interactions. It serves a purpose. It's purposeful. It's yogyam. There's a transactional functionality, just like we talked about the pot. The pot can be used as a musical instrument. The pot can be used to carry water. It's useful, but is there really a pot there? Is there really a shirt here? We can't say it's non-existent because they wouldn't exist. We wouldn't use them if they were completely non-existent. The only non-existent shirt that there is, the only tucham shirt that I have ever heard of, is the Emperor's New Clothes. Have you ever heard of the Emperor's New Clothes? Have you heard that story by Hans Christian Andersen? Apparently, there was a very proud king, a very foolish king, and he hired a couple very dubious characters to make his clothing. And they said that he had special cloth that only the most qualified people could see, that only the most intelligent people could see. And the only other people who could see it were those who were properly positioned in life. He commissioned this royal special clothing that was very subtle and very fine. And they came and they clothed him with it. They put the clothing on. And in fact, there was nothing there. But they pretended to put the clothing on, put his shirts on, put his shoes on, put his socks on, put his shirt on and his overshirt and his coat and all that. And he didn't see anything, but he didn't want to admit that he didn't see anything because he was supposed to be the king and he wouldn't have been in the right position, and he would have been unintelligent if he didn't see this. And all the ministers says, yes, 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 oh, that's so beautiful, that's amazing, although they didn't see anything either. You know the story. And then he went walking out into the street, and everybody said, oh, that's beautiful, what beautiful clothing, what beautiful fine clothing the king has, because they didn't want to be a fool until finally, a little boy says, the emperor has no clothes. And everybody starts laughing and saying, oh, yes, 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 we see. The emperor has no clothes. The emperor has no clothes. And that is tucham. That's tucham clothing. That's not existent clothing. But this shirt is not tucham. This shirt is not non-existent. So we cannot dismiss it. So we need a new ontological word. We have tucham, which is non-existent. There's also a word andritam, which sometimes is introduced, which is called false. Like this is not a tucham flower. This is not a non-existent flower. This is not satyam, right? It's not a real flower in that sense. So there's another term, anritam, meaning a false one. It's a false flower. It's not a real one. 10 plus 10 equals 100. That's false. Water boils at 20 degrees centigrade. That's false. Anritam. But more to the point, we have satyam, that which is existent. We have that which is completely non-existent, tucham. And then we have the shirt. If fabric is satyam, if fabric exists, does the shirt exist? Like I say, we can't dismiss it. So we have a new ontological word. The ontology, of course, means the understanding of reality, the understanding of existence. Ontological words are words which describe our understanding of how things exist, if they exist, of reality. So we have a new word, mithya. Mithya. There's no object called mithya. You can't say, bring me a glass of mithya. But we can say that this shirt is mithya. And what do we mean by mithya? The characteristics of mithya is that when you look at this shirt, where do you find the shirt? Is the shirt the collar? Is the shirt the sleeve? No, it's not the sleeve. Is the shirt the torso? No, it's a shirt. No, is it the tail? No, is the shirt the buttons? Is a shirt the hem? Where's the shirt? It's like a car. Where's the car? The car is it in the tire? No, the tire's not the car. Is the hood the car? Is the gasoline the car? Is the paint the car? No, it's an assemblage of things. It's a functional assemblage to which we apply the word car. But when you look at it, there is no car there. It's a notional thing, a car, and it's a functional thing, but it's not satyam. So to the shirt, it's a functional thing. It's a collection of parts, but it's decomposable. And when you look at anything in the world, anything is decomposable into parts. Something mithya is said to be sat asadbhyam anirvachaniyam. Sat asadbhyam anirvachaniyam. It is said that it cannot be sat, meaning satyam. It's not true. It's not totally real. It's not like the fabric is real, because the fabric existed before the shirt, when the shirt is there, and after the shirt. So it's not non-existent, but it's not existent either. Sat asadbhyam anirvachaniyam, something which cannot categorically be stated to be real or unreal. That is mithya. The shirt cannot categorically be stated to be real, satyam, because it comes and goes in relation to the fabric. It cannot be said to be categorically unreal like tucham, because we interact with it. We have a transaction. It has a transactional reality, and it has a form, and it has a name. Sat asadbhyam anirvachaniyam. It's not illusion. This world is not illusion. This world ontologically is mithya. And it is adhishtana ananyat. Adhishtana is the basis, the substratum. It's substance. And it's ananyat. Anyat means other. Ananyat means not other. So it's not other than its substratum. It's not other than its material. So you look at the shirt, and the shirt is not other than the cloth. Which, what does this mean? It means that the shirt does not enjoy an independent existence. If you take the cloth away, there's no shirt. You can't think of a shirt without cloth. It enjoys no independent existence. When you touch the shirt, you're touching the cloth. The weight of the shirt is the weight of the cloth. The color of the shirt, the pattern of the shirt, are the color and the weight of the cloth. The shirt, even without cutting the stitching, if I didn't cut that stitching, in your knowledge, the shirt resolves into fabric. You can see that there's nothing but fabric here. The shirtness of this fabric is not inherent to this fabric, because if I cut the stitches out, I can make handkerchiefs out of it. I can make pants, tiny pants out of it. I can make a different type of shirt, a short sleeve shirt, or a bunch of handkerchiefs. I can make other forms, other useful fabric, textile object to which I will give the name handkerchief, to which I'll give the name pants, to which I'll give the name socks. If shirtness was really the intrinsic nature of cloth, it would always be a shirt, but that's not true. We have a name and a form called shirt, which the cloth temporarily seems to enjoy. But the shirt is adhishtana ananyat. It is not separate from its adhishtana, from its basis. It is not separate from the cloth. The shirt does not enjoy an independent reality. And wherever the shirt is, the cloth is. You can't say, bring me that shirt, but leave the cloth over there. You can't. And yet we're pointing to the same object. We're pointing to the same thing. It's just that the shirt is the name and form which the cloth currently enjoys. And the name and form are mithya, because it does not enjoy an independent reality. It is always based on something else. When I see the shirt, I will always see the cloth. If you clearly understand these drishtantas, these examples, when we get to the darshtanta, to the thing the example is being used for, it will be very clear. In fact, when we talk about rope snakes or clay pots or fabric shirts, soon you will be seeing the darshtanta instead of the drishtanta when we talk about the drishtanta. Drishtanta is that whose end, whose goal, whose anta is drishta, is the seen thing. So we use an example to show the nature of reality here. And it's a little slippery, so we first talk about these examples, and then we'll apply that to the darshtanta, to the atma. Because it says atma is satyam, everything else is mithya. So let's see in a very concrete way what this satyam and mithya are. So is the cloth covered by the shirt? Does something mithya hide satyam? Does mithya hide satyam? Does the shirt hide the cloth? No. In fact, mithya, something that's mithya, reveals where there's mithya, there's satyam. Do I need to transcend the shirt to see the cloth? No. Only in my knowledge. We could relate only to this notion of shirt all of our lives and never really stop and say, oh, all there is cloth here. All there is fabric here. The shirt does not hide the cloth. I don't need to transcend the shirt to see the cloth. We could say, if we wanted to get a little religious about this, we could say that the shirt is born of cloth. The shirt is sustained by cloth. And this shirt resolves back into cloth. Because chronologically, in time T1, there was only fabric. In the beginning, there was only fabric. From this fabric was created this entire world of shirts. Fabric sustains this entire world of shirts. And unto fabric, shirts will go at their end of their time. It's very interesting. And it's an interesting math that Vedanta uses. Because the truth of one shirt is the truth of another shirt. Like we saw last week, if I know the truth of the pot, then I know the truth of the plate, and I know the truth of the cup. Mritika eva satyam. The clay itself is satyam, is true. I told you this story many weeks ago. It's a story. It's just a story. I have a friend who I did a favor for, and he owns a jewelry store. And he said, oh, come please, I want to repay you for your kindness. Come into the store. You can take one of anything you like. And I look and there's all this beautiful 22-karat yellow gold of bangles and anklets and necklaces and toe rings and finger rings. And he says, come, you can take one of anything you want. And of course, what do I do? You know, I've been studying with Pooja Swamiji for so long, I know what to take. Do I have to think very hard? Do I want a bangle? Okay, well, a necklace will weigh more than a ring. How much would a toe ring weigh? But I only get one thing. Probably a necklace is, no crowns. I didn't see any crowns or else I might have taken a crown. Of course, I take the one thing that's there, the one thing that's valuable. I take the gold. I take the one gold. So this is the first lesson in Vedanta mathematics. One bangle plus one toe ring plus one finger ring plus one earring plus one necklace plus one crown equals one. One gold. One plus one plus one plus one plus one equals one. Why? Because there's only gold there. We give a name and form to a ring. There's a name and form to a bangle. There's a name and form to a necklace. But the bangle is born of gold, is sustained by gold, and resolves back into gold. The gold does not change. The chain is never separate from the gold. The chain does not hide the gold. Wherever the chain goes, the gold goes as well. So that's one Vedanta math. The other Vedanta formula that we use, besides 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 1, is A equals B, but B does not equal A. A equals B, but B does not equal A. The bangle is gold, but gold is not bangle. Mithya, something that's mithya, that has an apparent reality, something that has a dependent reality, like the bangle, is gold. It's not different from gold. It cannot exist without gold. And yet gold is not the bangle. Gold is not defined by the ring, by the anklet, by the crown. Gold is none of these. And yet each of those is absolutely dependent on the gold. It is not separate from the gold. It is adhishtana ananyat. It is not different than its very substance, than its very basis. And it doesn't hide the gold. In fact, it reveals the gold. So we have satyam, which seems to be an adjective. And we have mithya, which seems to be an adjective. We have real things. We have unreal things. And we have things that are mithya, that have no independent reality. Now, what does this all have to do with me? Atma satyam tadanyat sarvam mithya. Atma is real, is true. Everything anyat, everything other than atma is mithya. So why am I talking about gold jewelry and fabric shirts and clay pots? If atma is satyam and the cloth is satyam, then of course that means atma is cloth. If a pot is mithya and clay is satyam, mritika eva satyam, then that must mean that the truth of myself is clay. No. What we're doing here is we're looking for what is the truth of the self. And we say that atma is satyam, means it exists. And so we look at the relationship between things that we say that exist and the things that might not exist. If there's a fabric shirt, what exists? What exists is the fabric. What has a quasi existence, a dependent reality, is the cloth. So now we know that the shirt is mithya and cloth is satyam. Clear. But let's look at cloth. Is cloth satyam? Let's extend the example. Let's go beyond the example. Is cloth satyam? Yes, of course. It can be made into all these different objects. It transcends any particular apparel that might be made from it. But I say no. I take the cloth and I pull it apart. And all that's left is a pile of strings, pile of threads. What happened to your cloth? Oh, cloth is not satyam. The thread is satyam. Wherever the thread is, the cloth is, that when you touch the cloth, you're touching the threads. The color of the threads is the color of the cloth, of the fabric. The textures of the string is the texture of the fabric. The strings must be satyam, because that is what truly exists. The cloth is just a name and form that comes and goes. Before the cloth was, the thread was. While the cloth is, the thread is. And after the cloth is, the threads are. Got it. Atma is threads. No. The cotton fiber, I take each of the strings and I pull apart the threads. What's there? Cotton fiber. That must be satyam. No. The cells, I put this under a microscope. What's there? The cells. The cells. Oh, without the cells of the plant, of the cotton threads, which make up the strings, which make up the cloth, those cells are satyam. Well, no, because those are made from molecules. Molecules are satyam. No, because there's atoms. Atoms are satyam. No, there's protons and neutrons and electrons. Oh, go with me now. No, because there's quarks and leptons and Higgs boson. Ah, so that must be truth. No, because quarks and leptons are made of strings. Okay, so now we're back to strings. Strings are made from cotton fiber. Cotton fibers are made of cells, are made of molecules, are made of atoms, are made of protons, are made of quarks, and leptons are made of strings, right? This is why I didn't study physics. Now, in each of those, we can say that at one level, one thing is real and other things are mithya because they depend on that real thing. The shirt depends on the cloth depends on the strings depend on the fiber, ityadi, etc. Ityadi, sometimes I say that means etc. But what is there all the way down? I say the shirt is. I say, no, the shirt is mithya, the cloth is. No, the cloth is mithya. What really is the threads. Is. The shirt is, the cloth is, the thread is, the fiber is, the cells is, the molecule is, the atom is. Is. So we have this adjective, is, existent. When we have a shirt made of cloth, we say that it's a fabric shirt. Because we could have a paper shirt, let's say, or a hemp shirt. We say that it's a fabric shirt. So fabric acts as an adjective, a modifier, as though an adjective to the word shirt. But that's completely backwards, as we see, because what we have there is cloth, and the modifier is shirt. We have a horse. We have a red horse, and we have a black horse, and we have a white horse. Horseness is the substantive. The adjective is red, black, or white. With the cloth, we have a cloth shirt, but really it should be a shirt cloth because the substantive is the cloth. The modifier is the shirt. We have the cloth in the form of a shirt. We have a cloth in the form of socks. We have cloth in the form of a shawl. We have a shirt cloth. We have a shawl cloth. And we have a socks cloth. We don't have a clay pot. We have potty clay. We have cuppy clay. We just like a black horse. Black is the adjective. It's the modifier for horse. So too, shirt is a modifier for cloth. But just as black is not inherent to horseness, it's an incidental attribute. A horse can exist without being black. Cloth can exist without being a shirt. Shirt, in a sense, modifies cloth, as does socks, as does pants. So we have pants cloth, shirt cloth, and socks cloth. We have the whole thing backwards. We have the whole thing turned around. So now if we have existent shirt, the shirt is, right? When we say something is, we mean it's real. We mean it's satyam. We mean that it exists. We have an existent shirt. We have the adjective existent to the substantive shirt, just like we have the black horse. But just like a clay pot, the real thing that's there is clay, not the pot. The clay, the word clay does not modify pot. The word pot modifies the clay. When we have a existent shirt, it's not the shirt that exists, it's the fabric. So really we should say a shirty cloth, a socky cloth. But when we look at existence, we say the fabric, the shirt exists, the fabric exists. We say that something exists. When existence is not an adjective to it, what really is there is existence. Because when we say, we can see existence all the way down, we see that we attribute the adjective existence, realness, to a shirt, to a cloth, to the fabric, right, to the strings. That is. But the only real thing that doesn't change there is the isness. Just like when we can change a cloth into a shirt, we can change cloth into socks, we can change cloth into pants. The cloth doesn't change. The cloth always is. It's the form that changes, right? It's the incidental attributes. So too, when we say the shirt is, what's changing is not the isness, not the existence. It is the name and form. It's not the existence. And when we look at anything, we say is. That table is, that desk is, this computer is, this microphone is. Is. When we look at anything, we say that it is. Unless it's tucham, which doesn't really exist at all. So look at your existence. Look at existence. Look at isness. When we say something is, it exists. It really exists. It's not mithya. Satya means everything else is mithya. Everything that has a name and form is mithya. Everything is decomposable. Everything is dependent on something else. But when you look at anything, it exists. We say it exists. Why do we say it exists? We can tear it apart. We can break it in half. We say a table exists. We can break legs off a table. What do we have? We have pieces of wood that exist. We can grind the wood up into sawdust. The wood no longer exists. The cells exist. The fiber exists. It is. There is no discontinuity in existence. This is satyam. This is sat. This is satyam. There is no discontinuity in existence. The presence of a particular name and form does not displace existence. Everything changes except existence. The isness, when we say it is, when we look at the entire world, everything exists. Where does existence stop? There's nothing I can point to which is bereft of existence. And yet when we look at the thing, it doesn't exist. It's not satyam. Mithya reveals satyam. The gold bangle reveals gold. Wherever there's a bangle, there's going to be gold. Wherever there is shirt, there's going to be cloth. Wherever there is mithya, there is satyam. Mithya does not hide satyam. I don't need to transcend mithya to understand satyam. I don't need to transcend the shirt to see cloth. I don't need to transcend the bangle. I almost said bagel. I don't need to transcend the bagel either to see satyam. There is nothing here that's not mithya when you look at it. What is there? The wall. The wall is decomposable. Where's the wall? Is it the paint? Is it the drywall? Is it the timber? Is it the insulation? Is it the wires in between? No, it's a It's a convenient form that seems to separate space from one room into the space of another room. It's not satyam, it's mithya. It's dependent on its material cause. And you cannot say it's real because it's not satyam, and you cannot say it's unreal. It's not tucham. And yet we say the wall exists. Anything in the world, we say, exists. It's like space. There is no discontinuity of space. There is no displacement of space. There is no displacement of existence. There is no discontinuity of existence. It goes from behind me to in front of me. And even space itself exists. We say space exists. Just like we say the shirt exists. Yeah, that shirt is. That shirt exists. Does it exist? We see it's mithya. It's not different from its nimitta karanam. It's not different from its material cause. It's nimitta karanam. It's not different. This is amazing if you really see this. And then, why is Atma satyam? How can that be? I am this body, mind, sense complex. I am karya karana sanghata. I am fat, I am tall, I am the body, I am the mind, I am the emotions. I have to be the emotions because they feel so real. Remember, last week and the week before, we saw that this body is an object. Is this body satyam? Where is the body? Think of it as a car. Are the tires the car? No. Is the hood the car? No. Is the oil the car? Is the gas the car? Is the steel the car? Is the battery the car? No. None of those objects possesses carness. It's all decomposable. It's all convenient form. This body, which is an object in this world, which I know through the five senses, is decomposable. Literally, right now, I can take it and chop my little finger off. Where's the body? Is it the finger? No, that's not the body. Is it the eyes? No. This is an amalgam. This is an assemblage of different parts, which we treat in its aggregate as a real thing called the body. But is it satyam? No, because this body is dependent on the substance that it's made out of. We can't say it's real. It's not satyam. We cannot say it's unreal. It's not the blood. It's not the bile. It's not the bones. It's not the connecting tissues. It's not the tendons. And it belongs to this world. It's an object in this world as anything else is. So to the senses, so to the prana, so to the mind. Is the mind satyam or is the mind mithya? Remember, satyam is that which exists. I said last week, trikalepi tishtati is a definition of satyam. Trikalepi tishtati, it exists in all three periods of time. Trikala, trikale, locative, in trikala, in three periods, upi, even, also. Tishtati, it exists, something that exists in the past, in the present, and in the future. So the reason why the shirt is not satyam is because it has a prior and a posterior non-existence. And it's completely dependent on its adhishtana, on its substance, on its basis. Look at the mind. The mind is just a stream of thoughts, of visual thoughts, of verbal thoughts, of memories, of projections, of ever-changing emotions. It's the nature of the mind to be as changing as quicksilver. It's mithya. It's not satyam. It changes all the time. I see the mind. The mind has form. The thoughts have form. The emotions have form. They have shape. And they have a prior and posterior non-existence. So are thoughts real? Do thoughts really exist? I say this thought is, this thought is, this thought is, this thought is. But they're constantly changing. It's a constant stream. Can I have a thought without awareness? If mithya is adhishtana ananyat, something that is mithya is ananyat, not separate from its adhishtana, from its basis. What's the basis of thought? The basis of thought is awareness. You cannot have a thought without awareness. You cannot have a thought without existent awareness. We say the thought is, the thought is, the thought is, the thought is, but that isness is satyam, it does not belong to the particular name and form of the thought. The thought is solely dependent on me as an existent being. I, as we saw in meditation, am an existent shining being. I am aham asmi, I am aham bhami, I shine. I am a conscious existent being. I illumine all of this that is anatma. Tad anyat sarvam is anatma. Everything other than this atma is called anatma. I illumine all anatma, all non-me. I illumine it all. I illumine these names and these forms which are ever changing. I as a conscious being. And aham bhami, I shine like the sun. I am not one who is a shiner. I don't, like a flashlight, you know, I intend to shine on this thing and illuminate it, but I just shine because that's my nature. My nature is self-luminous. My nature is consciousness, which is self-luminous. I shine, aham bhami. I am, aham asmi. Does the thought, which is mithya, does that cover the truth of myself? Do I need to remove thoughts to reveal consciousness? Do I need to remove thoughts to reveal existence? Do I need to remove the shirt to reveal the fabric? Do I need to remove the bangle to reveal the gold? Do I need to remove thoughts to reveal consciousness? Do I need to remove thoughts to reveal existence? Thoughts do not hide existence. Thoughts do not hide consciousness. Thoughts do not exist without conscious existence. I don't need to transcend thoughts. I don't need a new experience to see satyam, atma satyam. I need to understand the nature of satyam and the nature of mithya, the nature of atma and the nature of anatma, because atma satyam, tat anyat sarvam mithya, I am satyam, I am that existence, and that existence is not outside of my experience. When I say aham satyam, it's not outside of my experience, it's the very core of every experience. In every cognition, I have experience through cognition. The mind takes shape. I illumine that form of the mind, and that mind is not separate from consciousness. A thought is just consciousness with a particular name and form, and that name and form is mithya. It's not sat. It's not satyam. I don't need to remove my thoughts. I need to understand the nature of thoughts and the nature of myself. I need to see that aham satyam, I am that which really exists, which does not change. Achalaha, I do not move when the thoughts move. I illumine them all. And in fact, I lend my existence to all thoughts. I lend my existence to the entire jagat. Because when I say that table exists, that table is mithya. It has no inherent existence in and of itself. You decompose the table as much as you want, you're never going to find existence. Existence is not objectifiable because existence is me. I lend existence to that name and form, which I call a table. I illumine that table. I illumine the thought. I lend my awareness to this body. This body appears to be an awareful being. That's me. That awarefulness is me. That existent body is that existence that I attribute to everything. To even time and space is the existence which is me, which doesn't change. There's no discontinuity in existence. There's no discontinuity in awareness. You can never get rid of yourself. That's the thing. You can never dismiss yourself. It's a wonderful meditation just to sit and just try to get rid of yourself. You can't, because you are the only existent thing here. You are a self-luminous existent vastu. There is no other thing here. You cannot show me another thing. All you can show me are assemblages of parts of things which are easily decomposable, even in knowledge. I can decompose them physically. I can decompose him through my knowledge. There's no substantive here other than existence, and that existence is me. You cannot get rid of yourself. If you sit and try to meditate and get rid of consciousness, nathi, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, I'm not awareness. Get rid of awareness. Okay, I can, in my meditation, I can see I'm not the body. I can even stop experiencing it because my mind becomes so calm. I can stop having thoughts. I cannot get rid of this conscious being. So, mithya is born of satyam. It is sustained by satyam, and it resolves back into satyam. Thoughts are born of consciousness. They are sustained by consciousness, and they resolve into consciousness. What occasion, what situation do I need to create to see myself? There's no situation I need to create. There's no occasion I need to invite. There's no new experience I need. I need knowledge of what is. I need tattva vivekaha. I need that discriminative discernment between what is real and what is not real. Next week we'll talk a little bit more about this, but then we'll go into more detail about really the nature of the individual. There are several ways to look at the individual. And he introduces this in the next sentence. There are several models which are very comprehensive that help us understand this, because it can be a little abstract. This is where Nididhyasana comes in. This is where meditation comes in, because you need to sit with this in a very intimate way to really internalize this. And you need to expose yourself to this pramana again and again, because it seems clear, but there's often vagueness and doubt. And you say, well, how can it be that I am not this? How can it be that everything is me? What do you mean A is B, but B is not A? You just said that A is B, but B is not A. This anatma, tat anyat sarvam, all of this is dependent on satyam, but satyam is independent of all of this. If aham satyam, if atma is satyam, then really what you're saying that all of this is dependent upon me. What do you mean? What do you mean? The stars and the moon and the galaxy are dependent on me? That's quite a big bite to swallow. That's why you need to look at this in different ways. And so when we look at the individual from the ways that are being presented in the next section, it helps clarify some of this about the nature of the subtle body. Someone also asked a question in one of the satsangs, what is the nature of the soul? What's the nature of the individual? What happens when you die? That will be addressed in the next class or so. So let's take just a moment to sit. Om Swasti Prajabhyav Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahimahishah Go Brahmane Vyashubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshati Parchanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yankshobarahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavanti Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amrtangamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. Om Tat Sat Sarvam Ishvararpanamastu.
Dakshaji, this was a pretty enlightening class, or rather a class that makes us all think a lot more. Definitely riveting, let's put it that way. So one question I had, and although you might have gone over this a couple of times, in the example where, let's say, the wave is not wave, but it's water, but then you go recursively, right? Like the water is not truly water. It's made of hydrogen and oxygen molecules. And then molecules is not true, and the atom is true. And the atom is not true, and so on and so forth, right? I mean, I know it's just an example, but like, you know, what is your point there about like, is relative to one level, one is true? Is that what you're saying? Or is it the lowest level, which is just a tiniest dot, is true, and like everything else is not true?
So there's sort of two levels. Is one is a drishtanta, where the example where you just keep it at two levels. You have the wave and the water. To understand the relationship between asatyam and mithya. So when you keep it, like last week, the pot and the clay, we didn't take it any further than that. Pot and clay is the bread and butter, if you will. Clay pot and rope snakes are the bread and butter of Vedanta, of teaching. That's just to show the relationship that the mithya is not separate from the satyam, and that the mithya doesn't hide the satyam. All examples are constrained. If you think too much about an example, you can always kind of find counterexamples that extend beyond the scope of what the example is trying to illustrate. When you see the wave is nothing but water, and water is nothing but H2O, and H2O is nothing from particles, what you're really saying is that there's nothing that you can point to as an object which is satyam. So when you talk about just that one level of shirt and cloth, you have to understand just the relationship between those two things. But then you need to bring that vision into the world and see that there is nothing. There's nothing here that is satyam in the world of name and form. Because you can't just stop at the cloth. You have to say that, okay, so now provisionally the cloth was satyam. But of course, when you look at the cloth, that itself is mithya. And then that adhishtana is mithya. And that adhishtana is mithya. So at every level, you cannot identify real, the satyam, that which truly exists. 1,000 years ago, what level did they go down to? Maybe little shards of pot, right? Or the threads, or the fibers. They didn't know about cells. And then once the microscope was invented, you could go down to the cell level. And then, you know, once the electron microscope was invented, you could go down to molecules. Then you could go down to atoms. And then, who knows, strings, all that. It doesn't matter where that ends. I think, really, that's endless. The point is that there's nothing here that's not an assemblage, which is decomposable into other parts, and therefore it's not satyam. And they're all dependent on the adhishtana. In a two-level example, the shirt is always dependent on the cloth, and that same understanding goes all the way down and all the way up to anything you can see. And so the final question is, what is the final resting place of that understanding? What is the final adhishtana? So the purpose for decomposing it and the purpose for going further and further down is just to show the mithyatvam of anything you can point to, the status of being mithya of anything you can point to, and that it all resolves purely into existence. And existence is in our experience. We see, we say things exist. We have a sense of what that means. And so we can see that existence, which we attribute to any object and we treat as if it's an adjective, is really the substantive. Just like the cloth shirt, the word cloth is as though an adjective to shirt, when really what's there is cloth in the form of a shirt. So too, we say this is a real table. It's an existent table when all we have is existence that seems to have a form of a table. So it's to show that everything just resolves into existence because there's nothing here that is not mithya. And mithya cannot exist without satyam. Wherever there's mithya, there's satyam, because wherever there's an apparent reality, it's dependent on something else. It's not shunya underneath. It's not emptiness underneath. There's something there, and that existence is, and that existence is me.
Yeah, what I was worried, Dakshaji, is like, in that same example, right? Like maybe I asked these questions in a different way, but yeah, if nothing is real at any level, then what is real, right? Like even that final thing that you can say is real can also be, so there is, at the end of the day, nothing is real. I mean, like, I'm worried I might start thinking in those lines.
Well, that's why we use the word satyam. That's why we start looking at these ontological words. Satyam means that which exists. Tucham is that which doesn't never exist. So we don't really have to worry about it. But it's, in contrast, it's good to understand because we're not talking about the non-existence, something that completely does not exist. We want to have a word that will cover this world. And I may accidentally loosely use the phrase, it does not exist. But really, what I really mean to say is that it's mitya. It has a dependent reality. It's not unreal, like the horns of a hare. It's not non-existent, but it's not existent. The word that covers the reality of everything in our experience here is mitya. And mitya is sat asidgam anirvachaniya. It is indescribable, anirvachaniya, as being either sat or asat, being truly existent or truly non-existent, because everything we see is in this gray area. Everything we see is, it's not existent. And when I say it's not real, what I really mean, it's not satyam. It does not enjoy existence in and of itself. It's dependent on something else for its existence, for its being. But it's not dismissible because it has this vyavahara yogyam. It has this utility. And when I hit my head against this mitya wall, it's going to hurt. It's going to mitya hurt. It's like that story where Guru and the disciples were walking down a path in a forest, and they see an elephant, and it starts running after them. And they all run. And when they get back to the Gurukulam, the student asks the teacher, "Teacher, I thought you said everything was just apparent. Everything was not satyam, that in truth the elephant didn't exist. So why is it that you ran?" And the teacher, of course, says, "Well, who told you that running was real?" So you have to keep things at the right level. You can't say that this world does not exist because we interact with it, but you cannot say it's real. So our search is for what is real, what is true, because that resolves the fundamental human problem. That's the value proposition, is that what is real is lasting and is actually the source of our purnatvam. And so this existence is the consciousness which I am, which is purnatvam. And those are the things that we're constantly searching for. We're constantly searching for something that's lasting, that's something that's fulfilling. And we're constantly searching for knowledge. This is the Sat-Chit Ananda, that the Satyam Jnanam Anantam that's talked about so freely, as if people understand what that is. So I don't know if I'm actually finished addressing your question. Ask another question if you have it, because it's not a complete vision to say that it all resolves into nothingness, because the one thing you cannot dismiss as being mitya is yourself, which is existence.
Yeah, the perspective is like clear and the understanding, yeah.
It takes some time to sit with this because that was a big step. To sit with a clay pot. Pooja Swamiji will sit with the clay pot for quite some time to really unfold that relationship. And at one time it seems clear, but then really always the question is, well, what does it have to do with me? So Swamiji talks a lot about, you know, the relationship between pots and clay, between satyam and mitya. Because if you understand this satyam and mitya, you understand Vedanta. He said that he often jokes about this European who came to India. And he was talking with him, and this European came up and said, "You know, I understand." He was a scholar. I think he was a professor of religious studies or Indian studies or something. He said, "Oh, I understand everything about Vedanta. The only thing I don't get is this satyam mitya thing." And that is Vedanta. That is a very powerful prakriya, right? It's a method of revealing really the truth of what is. There are a number of perspectives through which to see what is trying to be unfolded. Satyam is so simple and all-pervasive, and There is nothing separate from this one vastu, that we need to look at things from a number of different angles. And so we have these methodologies to try to unfold, to kind of force your mind into a corner so that you can't help but see what's trying to be unfolded, what's trying to be said. Sometimes we see it and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we need to see it again and again from a variety of perspectives. But because everything can be decomposed does not mean that it resolves in emptiness. It actually means the opposite. Because I am here as a conscious, existent being, what's left is just me. What's left is just existence. It's not non-existence. It's existence because everything seems to exist. Where does that existence come from? Existence, you can't decompose existence. You can't get rid of existence. And if existence is too abstract of a concept, then we'll work with that some more. Because it's not, it's the most personal thing that there is, existence. Because that is the truth of me. When I say, I am, aham asmi, aham bhami, I am and I shine, that is not a third person atma. That is me. And when I say, I am tall, short, big, male, female, smart, dumb, when I say I am any of those things, that I am is existence. That amness is existence. In Sanskrit, sat means truth or existence. Asti. Asti means it is. And sat and satyam all come from the same root, which means to be. So existence and to be and being are all really the same word, the same thing. So when I say I am, really what I'm saying that I exist. And when you see that everything else other than this existent consciousness, including this karya, karana, sankhata, the word that covers it ontologically is mithya, then that shifts the whole game. That shifts everything because the only solid place to stand is on that I am, that first person singular, which resolves into consciousness, which it resolves into the truth of who I am at this moment. And it's not abstract. It's who I really am right now. And I'm never covered. Mithya never covers me. I am. And it takes some time to sit with it to see it because it's so I don't say obvious. It's like the simplest thing and the most difficult thing to learn because it's how do you talk about something which nothing is separate from? And really the only thing that exists. It's really a dance to try to teach this and to understand this, and it takes some time sitting with it. And that's why Shravanam, Mananam, and Nididhyasana are the mukhya sadhanas, or the primary sadhanas, which is listening and understanding what the Upanishads say. This is all Upanishads. You look in the Upanishads, you look in the Bhagavad Gita, this is what it says. That's why there's so many Upanishads. You could just say Tattvamasi. And if you were Uttama Adhikari, you could just say you are that truth. And if you were one who had this sadhana chatushtayam, if you had all these qualities, this clarity of mind, this clarity of heart, if you had this vairagya, this viveka, this vimukshitvam, you'd see it in a heartbeat. But some of us are less than that. So we need exposure to, we need shravanam. We need thought processes. We need to ask more questions. You know, we really have to have that dialogue. And then we need to sit with this in meditation to really get rid of that viparita bhavana, that sense that I'm other than what's being revealed in the shastra.
Yeah. Akshaji, I had one more question, but I think I'm taking everybody's time here. But
I'll ask it. If you need to go, if anybody needs to go, feel free. I'll sit for as long as people have questions. But if you need to go, please.
Yeah, I'll do one last question here. So, okay. Dakshaji, what I was thinking is how much value we need to attach to in the pot and clay example or in the shirt and cloth example, right? Mm-hmm. How much are we trying to say that we should not as much importance to the shirt? Are we putting a lesser value to that? Or we just have to take it in totality? The way I'm asking that question is like even in the car example, right, that you gave, like, okay, is the tire the car right now? Is the engine the car? No, right?
Yeah.
But yet, if somebody comes and hits your car, you're saying, don't touch my car, right? Or any part, or even the body example, right? You touch any part of your body, you're touching me. So a damage to the shirt is damage to the cloth also.
Yeah.
So is it a two-way street where both of them have to be taken into consideration, of course, with the knowledge that, one is just manifesting, the shirt is just manifesting, the truth is real, the truth is the cloth?
Good question. A couple things. One is that the most reasonable approach, the approach with Viveka and Vairagya, is to treat everything with the value that it has on the level that it is. So the car has value. The car is functional. The car costs money. You do what you can to keep people from hitting it. You do what you can. You change your oil. You do what you can to maintain it. You wax it. And if you, I was never very good at waxing and washing cars, but some people do. Some people actually do maintain their cars better than I do. You maintain it. You give it the value that it has. You do what you can. You do what needs to be done. If you have an automobile, it comes with responsibilities. It comes with kartavyam, things that you need to do. You work with it on its level. You don't give it undue value. It has a value as a vehicle. When we identify with it, then that's when we have problems with it. When we say, I am my car, some people truly identify with their vehicles. Their value is tied up with the value of that car. Even when I got a new car, I bought one new car in my life. I parked it out in the corner there so no one would ding it. And the first day I got back, there was a ding in my car. Like, okay. So what can you do when you get a ding in a brand new car? You can go, oh, well, what can you do? It's karmapala. It's prarabdha. There's nothing I could have done. It is what it is, right? So that's treating it with the value that it has. So it's not like you disregard the things, money, money has value. You wouldn't want to give it to people who will do bad things with money. But at the same time, things may be more fluid in your life because you may not be committed to the model that you had before, wherein certain things need to happen for you to be happy and for you to be complete.
Yeah. Okay, I got it. Yeah. So the explanation. So take it on the face value, look at the deeper meaning at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, that's why I told that story about the elephant. If you meet a mithya elephant on the road, you mithya run away. That's a complete incorrect way to use the term mithya, but that's the idea. You give it the reality that it has. You don't up-level situations, because at the level of an elephant, that's the same level of this body. And this body needs to run away from a wild, angry elephant. But it doesn't mean that my running is any more real, or that the elephant is any more real. And treating something at its own level, I think, is very important, because oftentimes, say emotionally, we can get into the perspective where we might be tempted to approach somebody's emotional reactivity or sadness and try to up-level it with spiritual talk. If someone has someone in their family who has died, you don't go to them and say, don't worry, they didn't really die. The body comes and goes. Don't worry. Krishna said that. Don't grieve. Ashochanan vishochastvam. But if you up-level it, that is not giving the reality of the emotional feelings that people are having due respect. You need to treat things at their own level, and that will heal it. You can't up-level things like that. You have to address it, even for yourself. At one time in your spiritual development and your emotional growth, it's useful to address your own emotional life at its own level, because it's the inner child that's hurting. And if you dismiss the inner child, say, go away, you're not real, you're just pushing your feelings down. If you address it at its level, then you allow yourself to grow out of it. When you address someone else's pain through your compassion, you help heal that person, or at least you do what you can to try to heal that person. So you just treat everything at the appropriate level with compassion, with responsibility, and with vairagya. Because you have to have a great deal of vairagya if someone comes and smashes your car. It's valuable. And at this level, it's going to cost me $5,000 to get it fixed. And then you have some choices to make. So that's what I mean by treating something according to its value and at its level.
So that should be basically what you're saying is like understand the relationship and see what is more important, or understand its positional or the functional value that it provides. But it doesn't mean that we need to ridicule one or the other, right? Like, oh, you're just a shirt, right? Like, so we are not saying, just understand it, right? Like, it's, like so money also has its value. So like, don't go crazy after money. Money has its value.
Yeah.
You know, that's whatever, right? So is that a correct summary?
Yeah, you give things their due value. You give things their due value. And when you look at it, we attribute much more value to things than they really have, because we attribute the capacity for objects, people, situations, experiences to bring us happiness. And they do not have that capacity. So even though I need to make a living in this world, I need a place to live, I need an internet. I need some broadband. Maslow's hierarchy. I need to have some food. When everything is said and done and it's in its proper place, I see that my purnatvam, my fullness, is not dependent on any of this stuff. So the value in the end, giving something its proper value, is really having a objectivity towards it, an objectivity. And that objectivity says, I can engage with this as much as I want, and I don't need to engage in this if I don't want to. And that's where sannyasa, that's where renunciation comes in. You don't have to be a sannyasi to be a renunciate. You can see things in their proper place and see that my purnatvam, my fullness, is not dependent on any of this. I have vairagya, and then I'm free to deal with the world. If I am pulled by my raga and dvesha, by my aversions and my desires, I'm not free. I still have this notion that if I gain this object or this experience, I will remove unhappiness or I'll gain happiness. It doesn't mean that you don't navigate your life to create shreyas, to create prayas even, to do what is the most advantageous to bring your life forward to meet your goals and responsibilities. Thank you for coming. Thank you. Om Tat Sat.